Hello and welcome to the Saxo Market Call. It is Tuesday, 30th of March, 2021. The top of today's podcast, just to remind folks, we are having our latest Outlooks webinar for Q2 Outlook up tomorrow at 10:30 GMT, 12:30 CET. You can sign up for that to participate, and there will be a Q&A for those that would like to ask us questions directly. The strategy team will be represented by myself, Alci Espinozzi on fixed income, and Saxo Bank's Chief Investment Officer, Stan Jakobsen. You can find the sign up, you can see it on slide two, at webinars.saxo. So webinars.saxo, that'll lead you to the correct URL for a sign up. And for those that missed the live webinar, you can always go back to that same address, go down to the bottom, and around 24 hours after the event, we upload the recorded webinar. So that's convenient for those that are unable to attend live. All right, let's get into the daily action. And there's been some interesting moves recently in the market, and this hedge fund story, Archegos going belly up, has been an interesting driver. So we saw markets fairly calm yesterday. If you look at the headline action and the likes of the S&P 500 and the NASDAQ 100, closing around unchanged. And yes, in the case of the S&P 500, close to those all-time highs within about 0.5% of that. And on the momentum picture, which you can't quite see on slide three of today's slide deck, it's trying to turn higher again, but still a little bit of divergence relative to the former significant highs. I guess the interesting thing being, though, that the median stock and small caps had a pretty ugly session yesterday, which I'm showing on that little insert on the lower right. And then just, late last week, I was talking about the setup looked quite ugly in the S&P 500 momentum-wise, and we saw quite a turnaround on Thursday and especially Friday. And some are speculating, based on the timing of Goldman's unwind of those Archegos holdings and a really tremendous spike in the S&P 500 very late on Friday, I'm showing that on slide four, that Archegos was holding some sort of equity return swap. So they were short the S&P versus their basket of especially long Chinese names. So that when this very large basket of some unknown quantity was unwound, that means the hedges, so those short S&P 500 hedges had to have, would have been unwound all in one fell swoop. And it happened around some sensitive technical levels, and that could be behind that spike. So you just wonder what the quality of these current levels is. It's the main point here as the S&P trades up close to these all-time highs. And then I'm going to try to segue over to Alteo with the next slide here. And I think it's just, unpacking three very interesting things here that are going on in the market. First of all, the Archegos story itself, which is a couple of tweets from Christopher Cole. He's considered by many quite the volatility maven. He's very aware of the history of volatility, and has some very some great research papers his outfit Artemis Capital's put out over the years. Says that this story, and I agree with him, it reminds us of 2007. So it's a bit scary when you have something on this scale unwinding when it's complete, a complete black box, some operator that was able to develop this scale of a position and then was forced suddenly to unwind. And you wonder, what other whales are out there swimming around underneath the surface. So I agree with that. I think it's just and interesting to see these types of operators like Greensill and now Archegos suddenly going belling up with no sort of real prior warning. And then the other point he makes, and this is where I'm going to hand it over to Altea, he's noting the Treasury volatility. And especially interesting for us, of course, is that U.S. Treasury yields from 5 years and out are pressuring higher again. The 5 and 7 year actually making new cycle highs overnight. We have that situation and volatility picking up, whereas the junk, so the high yield corporate credit spreads, are extremely compressed. So I'll tell you, let's start with the U.S. Treasuries and what's going on here, and then Christopher Cole's comment that it just seems so strange when you have yields pressuring to the highs of the cycle, and yet these there's just zero. There's not one ripple of concern, especially in the high yield space, when even the investment grade space, as you've noted recently, has been under a lot of pressure.
Yes, John, I think that the main takeaway from yesterday's volatility and the Archegos stories implications in the bond market is that we have seen treasuries yields falling slightly at the beginning of the day when news broke about Archegos, but then later in the day yields started to resume their rise. So basically what the market is telling us is that Archegos looks to be doesn't look to be a systemic issue, at least right now, and the market is worrying more about inflation. And indeed, the market has been worrying about inflation expectations since the beginning of the year. And in slide six, you see that the fall in treasuries year to date of this quarter actually has been the worst since 1980. So there has not been a quarter in 40 years that has beat sell-off in treasuries that we are just about to close. This is a major issue because obviously it means that while the financial conditions of the market are about to tighten further, and this puts risky assets at risk. And here I go and pass to talk about the junk bond space and looking at what is happening there. Well, John, the thing is that junk bonds have been quite stable throughout all the quarters. And you can see that in slide number eight. In slide number eight, you see how in orange, high-yield corporate bonds have performed versus investment-grade corporate bonds in green. And as you can see, while investment-grade was falling, high-yield corporates were stable. And this has happened although treasuries have basically risen significantly. The 10 years almost doubled up since the beginning of the year. And not only that, we had also a record amount of junk bond issuance. This quarter has seen $139 billion worth of junk bonds issued in the primary market. And this has been the largest volume recorded by Bloomberg. And it has been the demand that was so strong that has helped junk bond yields to remain to an historic low, which is around 6.5% for CCC corporate junk corporate debt. But the issue here, John, and this is something that Christopher Cole was implicating in his tweet, is that as treasury yields continue to rise, more pressure is going to be applied on the junk bond space. So the later we see a repricing within this space, probably the bigger is going to be the sell-off that we are going to witness as well.
Also, you would assume if we're in an environment where we're seeing a recovery unfolding, the Fed is going to be sending less generous signals about its willingness to support the space if growth and labor market, especially labor market and figures are improving rapidly. It's a very interesting story, and it's just so interesting to see, as you point out, the strength in the space. And I was just pulling up one of the Barclays high yield spread indicators. It's fallen something like 17 basis points as of yesterday's close over the last, let's call it, six, seven sessions. So just, obviously it sends a signal out there that risk sentiment, at least in terms of credit, is still very strong, but it is a bit of a head scratcher as you and Christopher Cole point out. And then
I think, John, that the big point here is that because of inflation fears, investors prefer to pick credit risk over interest rate risk. This is the main topic that has been going on in the market throughout all the quarter, and we will see more probably in the next few weeks as well.
Great. And then in the forex space, so the rising U.S. yields, as we've noted many times recently, really pressuring the negative yielders, Swiss franc and the Japanese yen. Dollar Swiss trading up above 94 again this morning, and dollar yen above 110 for the first time in quite some time, as you can see on slide 9. It's really the first time since a brief wipeout or in everything dollar related over the pandemic. And 110 is a critical area. It does mark the upper margin of that descending channel that's been in place that started forming in 2017. It's also psychological. It's also coming right at the quarter end and Japanese financial year end tomorrow, as we've emphasized. So I think if we are headed for another leg higher in US yields, it'll be interesting to see if that 110 level just melts away and we're on the road to 115 in dollar yen. And then noting on slide 10 in the FX trend evolution overview, and the little chart showing the dollar renminbi saw the biggest move in quite some time, around 0.5% weakening of the Chinese renminbi. I think it's kind of a signal that the China's willing to allow their currency to fall a bit since the dollar's charging so hard here. And I think we could be headed towards 665 to 670 in that pair if the dollar maintains its strength. And you can see in the trend evolution that the momentum has tilted back lower for the Chinese currency, and the dollar strength is still very much in evidence. Things pretty quiet elsewhere. I think volatility is only going to pick up if risk sentiment volatility picks up as well. And the euro posted some minor new lows this morning as well. And I'll say you've noted that we have a couple of interesting Italian sovereign bond auctions up, but your emphasis is a bit more on the French situation, I guess, on Thursday.
Yes, John, we have, while in the US, we don't have long-term bonds auctions. In Europe, we have Italy issuing 5 and 10 years BTPs today. Tomorrow, Germany is coming out with a 10-year Bund. And on Thursday, France is going to issue 10 years OATs. Among all these bond auctions, I think that the one to be careful about is going to be Thursday French OAT auction, for the simple reason that the 10 years OAT yield has been rising 20 basis points since the beginning of the year, and now it's shy just almost 5 basis points from zero. So the big question here is that if we see the 10 years OAT breaking above 0% in yield, this will send obviously alarming bells to the ECB that is trying to keep interest rates in the euro area stable. And if French yields turned positive, the implications also for the periphery can be quite big because we still have Portugal and Spain being priced around 20, 25 basis points. Like just slightly above zero. So, ironically, Italy has been supported from the beginning of the year, and I think that we can say thanks to Draghi because he has provided that stability that the Italian government has been looking for some time, and volatility in BTPs has been limited. So today, I don't think that we will see a lack of demand in these issuances, but for sure on Thursday, that's going to be an essential auction to watch out for.
Yeah, it's really interesting to see how the U.S. yields their effect on yield curves, or not. In the case of, for example, Japan, where it was dragging yields higher, and the Bank of Japan has essentially declared a cap out to 10 years, at least plus or minus 25 basis points either side of zero, and that is why the Japanese yen will remain so sensitive to U.S. yields as long as we get real yields continuing to rise in the U.S. Now, if it shows down the road that the U.S. fiscal stimulus is, generating irresponsible levels of inflation, and that the Fed is not going to respond, or that it's going to tease, and this I think is the eventual dollar bearish story, that it has to tease, it'll do something about longer yields, or that the Treasury will force the Fed to do the same. That is the dollar devaluation story when those real U.S. yields go lower. For now, they're rising, and this is supporting supporting the U.S. dollar. Okay, I don't have much on equities today. Peter Garnery will be back with us next Tuesday, and tomorrow will be our final podcast. Actually, until next Tuesday, we have a nice long 3 day holiday, so a 5 day weekend here in Denmark. Lucky us. And but we will round out the pre-Easter podcast with our Chief Investment Officer Stein Jakobsen tomorrow, and maybe a little bit on the Q2 outlook there as well, teasing that a bit, as well as some longer term themes. So do tune in for that. But for today, just you can see on slide 12 the earnings highlights we pulled out there, and noting one interesting one up tomorrow is the Hennes & Mauritz story we talked about, and do tune into yesterday's podcast for a fuller look at this week's earnings reports. Hennes & Mauritz is quite interesting because of the flap over their comments on Xinjiang cotton and the Chinese response in China to their operations. So you can see how the last few weeks have seen the stock under considerable pressure. So interesting to see what they say about that. And a couple of other interesting names reporting today, Lululemon and BioNTech, the maker together with Pfizer of one of the COVID vaccines. And just 2 seconds on the COVID front, still notching our concern level there as we have the U.S. case, average case count up some 11% week on week, likely meaning that it's actually worse because it generally takes people starting to get sick before they go get tests, et cetera. There's that race in the U.S. between the vaccine and new illness. So far, the hospitalization rate is up slower, but that also lags a bit. So a bit of concern there, but bigger concern, of course, in the worst case right now, which is Brazil. But even places like India are ramping, and Philippines, which hasn't gotten much coverage, is actually ramping very aggressively in terms of the case count and is at double its prior worst peak quite suddenly. So this COVID business is not behind us by any stretch. Although not necessarily registering on the market at this point in time. Okay, macro calendar, slide 13. We have a couple of interesting data points. The March flash CPI out of Germany. We note that there was a very big month-on-month gain in February. That's expected for the March timeframe to have notched another 0.5% month-on-month gain. Obviously, oil price is a big contributor there, and to go up to 1.7% year on year. That's a negative real yield you can believe in. One of the reasons the euro is weaker when you have 10-year bunds trading nominal negative and you have a 1.7% inflation rate. And then we have March consumer confidence in the U.S. looking for that, again, the resurgence in the labor market. That tends to coincide or correlate quite closely with the labor market figures, which get even more interesting with tomorrow's U.S. ADP payrolls change, the private payrolls, and then on Friday, the U.S. official non-farm payrolls change. And we'll cover it tomorrow. We've been talking about it, but just note that Alabama Amazon.com worker unionization vote will be held at some point today. And we'll take a look at that in tomorrow's podcast. For today, we thank you for joining. Let's see what happens, and we'll be back tomorrow with the Saxo Market Call.